Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Well, hello everyone from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson, and you are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on this magical network we call Blog Talk Radio. We hope everyone's having a great week as have a beautiful Thursday night here in the central part of Indiana as we're celebrating Super Bowl in Indianapolis, and tonight's show is so appropriate. I call him North America's greatest sports fan. Mark Chesna from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service will be talking with him from the remote jungles of Shepherdstown, West Virginia. So we're looking forward to tonight's show. As always, handling the technical responsibilities, our studio producer, Melissa Hovey, technical engineer Wayne Larson, music done by Jim Johnson, and from the massive Wild World News Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, the honorable, distinguished, and always humble and prepared, Dr. Henry Day. Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening, Mr. Batson. Can you believe the city the last week? It is alive.
Oh, my Lord. I don't think anyone in Indianapolis had any idea what was coming. I mean, it has been phenomenal, the various channels. I mean, we have direct TV, they should pay us for this, and there was three different shows coming from Indianapolis on three different networks. I mean, it's unbelievable.
And the fans, it is unbelievable.
They've had record crowds and record temperatures, but today we enjoyed 50 degrees. Yesterday, my thermometer said 71 degrees in January. Who could have ever predicted that?
Yeah, that's incredible, and we're enjoying it. And we're saving a lot of money on our heating bill this year.
Oh, my Lord, we are. But I have to tell you the truth, my black bears are totally bewildered. They don't know what to do. They're thinking, what's going on? Is spring always here? This is phenomenal. We want to tell everyone that tonight's broadcast is brought to you by the first annual Chautauqua Lake Bigfoot Expo. It's happening May 6th at the Chautauqua Suites in Mayville, New York. Here's that phone number, the hotline, to get your reservations today, 716-789-3383. What a great program we have planned, along as yours truly, but Melissa Hovey, Steve Calls, and Billy Willard will be the speakers. It's going to be a phenomenal evening for those interested in the Bigfoot Sasquatch phenomenon, and that will be happening May 6th at Chautauqua Lake in western New York. The following portion of Larry Batson's Wild World is brought to you by Alphabet Swamp, the new children's book by Cheryl and Larry Batson. Order your autographed copy today at www.larrytheanimalguy.com or send check or money order for $10 per copy to WES 4140 North, 600 West, Greencastle, Indiana, 46135. Shipping and handling is included.
It's now time from his broadcasting mecca in Indianapolis, Indiana, the distinguished Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News.
Well, I'm broadcasting tonight from the Hotel Fabulous in the sparkling heart of downtown Indianapolis, the former ball-bearing capital of the world. Here's the Wild World News for February the 2nd, Groundhog's Day.
Oh.
And I guess the groundhog saw a shadow today, so 6 more weeks of winter.
Well, if it is 6 weeks like the last 6 weeks we have enjoyed, bring it on.
We will enjoy it.
Yes.
Okay, now since you are a wildlife educator, could you tell me how much wood could a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood?
When you said that, I thought of the commercial. Quit chucking my wood.
Yeah. Great commercial.
Yeah.
All right. The village people were here in town this week for our Super Bowl festivities. And they sang one of their famous songs in the Navy. And it went over great. But here's a Navy story that people aren't going to like too much. Now, conservationists and Native American tribes have sued the Navy's expanded use of sonar in exercises off the West Coast, saying that the noise can harass and kill whales and other marine life. Now, the environmental law firm Earth Justice and other groups have sued the Marine National Fisheries Service, saying it was wrong to approve the Navy's plan for the expanded training. Mm-hmm. Now, the Fisheries Service and the Navy had declined to comment, but they've done studies for many years, and yes, it is very harmful to the whales and other sea life there off the coast.
Well, you know, the Navy actually trains dolphins to detect various ships and submarines, so that's kind of interesting that they would do something like that.
Yeah.
Well,
I have to agree.
Yeah.
Now, for you and I and other reptile lovers, here's some good news. Claxton, Georgia. The March 10th and 11th Rattlesnake Roundup Festival is getting a makeover. The organizers say they're going to no longer sell the snakes or harm them in any way.
Wow.
Now, for 45 years, hunters have competed to round up wild rattlesnakes and sell them. Now, the Evans County Wildlife Club will feature the snakes that they have captured by biologists and the conservationists instead of the ones that were caught to be sold.
Mm.
So, there's some good news, because we do love rattlesnakes.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now, this weekend, if you're driving home after the Super Bowl and you see some elk on your way, say you're going through Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the state is asking tourists not to feed the elk. Now, the state's wild elk population was extinct in the late 1800s. And small numbers of western elk were introduced in the early 1900s. Now, the herd has grown from 65 in 71 to 800 today.
Man.
Yes, they're doing very well. Now, according to the Game Commission, if you stop, you could be ticketed. So don't feed the elk.
No, you shouldn't feed them.
All right, now the last couple of months, we've been reporting about the snowy owls. They're just moving all across the United States. Muskegon, Michigan. Snowy owls are showing up in large numbers across the Lower Peninsula as they forage for food beyond their normal range in the Arctic tundra. Now, the likely reason is the expansion in the lemmings. The lemmings are doing very well, and that's the owl's main food source.
Well, that would explain it.
Now, as you know, all across the United States, these snowy owls are showing up. And if the lemming population is doing good, then the owls are nesting, they're having a good season. So I'm guessing rather than them migrating for food, these are probably fledglings that are working their way south because the parents have kicked them out. Get out of here. This is our area, and you have to. So I have an idea that we're seeing a lot of fledglings here across the United States.
You're probably right, Dr. Day.
All right, now you're going to be glad to hear this. We're heading off to God's country.
Oh, Colorado.
Now, this story concerns a lot of animals. Estes Park, Colorado.
Mm.
Rocky Mountain National Park engineers are reviewing options for repairing the Lily Lake Dam after it was rated a high hazard dam by the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation. Now, failure of the dam, they say, is not imminent, but the dam is located, as you know, at the headwaters of Fish Creek, and it flows into Lake Estes and Estes Park there.
They had a dam break years ago, and it's called the alluvial fan, and it was pretty amazing how much water tore down through Horseshoe Park, Endo Valley, and into Estes Park, because it really wasn't that big a lake. And I believe that occurred in 1987. And it's pretty cool to go there because you can see the remnants of the tremendous amount of water. It really shows you how powerful water can be. You know, ask the Grand Canyon.
Yes, that was a good example. All right, now we've got some ancient animal news.
Oh.
Carnegie, Oklahoma. A Caldo County man discovered mammoth remains on his property. The mammoth jaw and tooth were probably washed along a stream for many years before they came lodged in the gravel bar there. Now, the jaw fragment is about a foot long and about a foot and a half long, and the tooth is about 8 inches.
Yeah, thanks.
Now, wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah.
To find part of a mammoth on your property.
It would be. That'd be very cool.
All right, well, if you like bugs as much as I do, you're going to love this story. Champaign, Illinois. Scientists with the Illinois National History Survey are sharing $2.6 million in grants from the National Science Foundation to create a digital photo collection of millions of insects. Now, the project will create a virtual museum of 56 million species among a dozen Miss West institutions.
You know, I had a suggestion to a youngster that was interested in insects, entomologies for the scientists, and I suggested to him that he make his insect collection of photographs of various bugs that he found in his community, and he got into it. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, well, this is a pretty exciting project. People all over the world will be able to.
Yeah, it is.
Bugs from everywhere.
Yeah.
All right, now in a few days we got a full moon coming up, and what do we warn our listeners on a full moon?
The wife might get mad.
That's right, yeah. There are more animal attacks on a full moon than any other day of the month, so beware. All right, now I have a question for our guest tonight, Mark.
Yes.
Super Bowl Saturday is the slowest day of the entire year for what?
Travel? I don't know. No, travel
well,
is coming up.
The answer is?
No, television. No, I don't have any idea.
Weddings.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
That makes sense.
Just that kind of makes sense, huh?
Yeah.
Well, that's
yep.
The Wild World News for February the 2nd.
Well, once again, a commendable job done by Dr. Henry Day and his staff at the Wild World News headquarters at Super Bowl Central in Indianapolis, Indiana. We want to tell everyone to check out my website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com, and our brand new Facebook page, Larry the Animal Guy and Friends, filled with photos and information about our animal family. Also, RadioMom.fm and the home of the Radio Mom Shop, where you can save 50, 60, 70% on vacations, restaurants, and a variety of other goods and services. And why not listen to my show, The 70s on Sunday, 12 to 7 each Sunday at RadioMom.fm. And we were talking Estes Park earlier. McGregor Mountain Lodge in beautiful Estes Park, Colorado, on the boundaries of Rocky Mountain National Park. We call it God's Country. Go to their website, info@McGregorMountainLodge.com. And I suggest to everyone, head out right now. It's a perfect time to go to see the Rocky Mountains and the beautiful vistas across the eastern part of Colorado. The Icebox, an affordable, lightweight, and packable tool for building a snow shelter in any snow conditions. An Icebox Igloo, engineered for strength, stability, comfort, and ease of use, is the added advantage for you. What you've been looking for. Folks, you can build your own igloo. Go camping. It's phenomenal. Here's the website, www.grandshelters.com. Also, the iKids Fishing Show. Check it out at iKidsFishing.com. It's the first kids fishing show, if I could talk, in the USA, starring kids teaching kids how to fish. 40 million fishermen spending $45 billion a year. The iKids Fishing Show is a keeper. More info at We Want You Cottages at Chautauqua Lake in western New York. That website, www.wewanchu.com. It's one of America's finest fishing resorts. And also, Tire Service Plus and owner Jerry Jones taking care of America's auto maintenance needs. They keep our animal truck on the road, traveling thousands of miles with our wild animal ambassadors. Give them a call, 317-243-0700. Those are a few of our underwriters that make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio. It's a great night to join us, everybody, as I present to you a gentleman, I call him North America's greatest sports fan. He travels all across the U.S. to thousands of sporting events, and I know he's fighting at the bit. He's so sad that he's not in Indianapolis, Indiana, to enjoy the Super Bowl, the New York Giants versus the evil New England Patriots, our guest tonight from Shepherdstown, West Virginia. The very sport-literate Mark Chesna. Good evening, Mark.
Evening, Larry.
Well, it's great to have you on the show. This is perfect timing.
Right, nice to be here. And the stat that the guy just threw out about the slowest day for weddings reminds me of a story. My growing up in Wisconsin, of course, being Packer fans, we would gather on the TV on Sunday afternoons, my brother and my sister and my father and I. And my mother would always say, she better not die on a Sunday or during football season or we wouldn't find her body till Monday morning. That kind of reminded me of the weddings. But anyway, that just kind of reminded me of the when I talked about the weddings thing.
But, I really feel for you, Mark. It looks as you were talking earlier. What happened to the pack this year?
Well, I think they kind of peaked too early. They reminded me of last year's team when they, you know, last year they were one play away from not even making the playoffs. And that play wasn't even their game. It was the Giants-Eagles. If anybody remembers, it was a game later in the year where the Eagles ran back a punt on the very, very last play of the game to beat the Giants. And if they wouldn't have done that, if the Giants would have just tackled the Eagles, I'm just talking hypothetically here, the Packers would not have even made the playoffs last year if everything would have fell in place, and much less ran to the Super Bowl. They got hot at the right time, beating the 13-3 Falcons, whoever there was. But the Packers had the reverse this year. They played well during the season and kind of slowed up the end. And the other thing that always seems to be a factor for me, and I especially for the Packers, but as I've looked at other sports too, it's the same thing. It's called the rematch factor. And everybody's looking at this New England Giants Super Bowl as a rematch of the Super Bowl a few years back when the Giants ruined the Patriots' chance for perfection. But it's not just that. It's the Patriots beat or lost to the Giants during the season, which if you look at this, the Packers last year, when they got into the playoffs barely, they snuck in, but they beat two teams that they had lost to during the season, Chicago and Atlanta. And this year the reverse thing happened to them. They had beat New York during the season and then ended up losing them in the playoffs. And it's a common thing. The year before that, they played Arizona last week of the season, beat them, lost them in the playoffs. A couple years before that, they had beat the Vikings 2-0, lost them in the playoffs. One year they beat Atlanta, and the first Lambeau loss ever in the playoffs was to Atlanta. It's kind of a thing called the rematch factor, and it's not just the Packers. I mean, look at LSU, Alabama. So, yeah, when you said about not being in Indianapolis to be at the game, yeah, I'm definitely there, but I'm a little bit more sad that the Packers aren't there as well to kind of defend their title. But, again, I think they kind of peaked early. Last year they came in with all these injuries. They still made it. This year everybody's healthy, and the Giants just kind of got them where they, you know, at the right time.
What do you think the strongest part of the Green Bay's team this year?
Well, it's got to be the offense. I mean, they had the worst defense in the league, and that's what was amazing about the NFL playoffs this year is you got three of the teams with the worst defenses in the league, you know, alive at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And that was New Orleans, Green Bay, and New England. And, you know, you saw what happened in New Orleans. You know, you saw, you know, San Francisco took care of the team. You know, it seemed to be that offense was running the season, was making all the stats. All of a sudden there was 4,000 or 5,000-yard quarterbacks or three. You know, it's kind of like the 60 home run baseball club. All the statistics in offense were geared up for the passing game. There was more 4,000 yard passers. There was more 3,000 yard passers. There was fewer 1,000 yard rushers, and there was less defense. And the teams that ended up kind of going the four, well, except for the Patriots, they had the, you know, so they're kind of the exception. But the Giants and teams like that, the Ravens were carried by their defense throughout the season. The Packers' weak spot, well, obviously, was their defense, being the 32nd ranked defense in the league. And how do you win a Super Bowl when you're last in the league in defense? But they were on their way, you know.
The Colts.
So to answer your question, the strength is offense, but they had the turnovers in the game against the Giants. They had like 4 or 5 turnovers, and that was, you're not going to win a game with 4 or 5 turnovers.
No. Well, you know, the Colts, when they won their Super Bowl run before they went into the playoffs, they had the worst defense right down at the bottom in the NFL. And then Bob Sanders got healthy, and watch out, here they were. They took it all.
Yeah, it's amazing what one guy can do to some teams. I mean, it's like a Troy Polamalu for the Steelers. You take one guy, or Ray Lewis out of the Ravens, you take one particular guy out of the lineup, and that can make all the difference in the world. Where, like I said, last year the Packers lost, you know, 10 or 12 players throughout the year, starters and second stringers. But, you know, so when they got to playoffs, they were playing without a lot of their regulars, but they still got hot at the right time, and they went on the road, and they, you know, and those guys have played throughout enough time during the season to, you know, that they didn't have to, you know, fill in at the last minute. So it was, you never know. Football's kind of a one, kind of like the NCAA tournament, one and done. It's not like you can play one game and, well, if you blow it, you can come back next week, you know. So it's, that's what makes it so exciting, I guess.
I guess so.
But as a Packer fan, it's also what makes it a little bit more frustrating this year.
Compare Aaron Rodgers against the legendary Brett Favre.
Did you say compare him?
Yes, sir.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes, sir.
Well, this year, you know, again, and I love Favre, and I love Rodgers, being a Packer fan, but I'm always a big Favre lover. Of all the athletes I've ever seen in my life, Favre was my all-time number one, so it's kind of hard for anybody to match up, but you can't deny what Rodgers has done. But again, if you look at the offense, it's like if you say, let me just use an analogy here, in baseball, to hit 40 home runs used to be a big deal. I mean, Babe Ruth had the home run record for so long, and then Maris broke it, and that still hung on until all of a sudden Sosa was hitting 60, McGuire was hitting 60, Griffey was hitting, Brady Anderson was hitting 50, you know, Bonds was hitting 70. And that's kind of happened in football, where the 5,000-yard plateau for yards by a quarterback, by Marino, was a one- or two-person, you know, in the history of football that had done it, maybe, you know, up to last year, and then a couple more did it last year, and three or four more did it this year. So to compare statistically Rodgers to Favre is like comparing Favre to Bart Starr. Because Bart Starr, as well, was a two-time champion as a first-time Super Bowl champion. But obviously, they both had great seasons. Favre's had, a better career still so far. I mean, everybody in Green Bay is all high on Rodgers, rightfully so. But he's won one MVP. They're so quick to down Favre, who's won three MVPs. I know a lot of it's for the personal reasons that they're downing him for, but they're kind of forgetting the fact that he won three MVPs. You know, and Rodgers has won one, and maybe he'll win two more. And he's also, you know, maybe he'll win a couple more Super Bowls. But Rodgers seems to be a little more calculated. He doesn't seem to take the risks that Favre took. But I think that's what made Favre what he was. I mean, he was kind of the gunslinger. Everybody knows that. He had the gunslinger mentality. And that's what he kind of lived and died with. And that's what kind of made him exciting. Now, Rodgers, I mean, I think he broke the record this year for all-time quarterback ratings. So, obviously, he played a little more, I used the word before, calculated, but a little more under control. And, that's what you got to give Rodgers over Favre.
Would you consider him the best quarterback in the NFL this year?
This year, yes. I mean, I don't think you can say best quarterback, you know, on a one-year status, because there's too many people that are one-year wonders, and Randall Cunningham had a couple of good years, a Trent Dilfer had a good year or two, but Peyton Manning, of course, living where you're at, have you seen the consistency that he's had year after year after year? Tom Brady, I know you don't like the Patriots, but he's a winner. You know, he's won, you know, and like a Montana, like a Young, but for this year, you have to give it to Rodgers, even though Drew Brees had a few more statistical yards and touchdowns. You're right. I think Rodgers was the best for this season.
How has the game changed in the last 10 years, Mark? You've watched so many. I mean, as far as the fan standpoint, how's the NFL changed?
Well, the first thing is, like I said before, the offense has become more offense-oriented. And obviously, the other thing that they've done is they've really cracked down the defense, which kind of goes hand in hand. I mean, they can't do anything on defense that they used to be able to do before. They can't, you know, touch him after 5 yards down the field. You know, there's more. I mean, think back in the days of the Ronnie Lott, and even if you go one step further back, where they used to clothesline, and that was Bill Berge from the Eagles, and that was literally legal. Now a guy from Sioux for Detroit, you know, stomps on a guy and gets suspended, rightfully so. That was a dirty shot, a cheap shot. But they don't let him play as hard on defense, which, again, gives the offense all the advantage, because that's why you got to give a lot of credit to a team like San Francisco, who, you know, it's amazing, because their coach last year was Singletary, who got fired, and he's a defensive-minded coach. And all of a sudden, he's replaced by a guy named, you know, Jim Harbaugh, who was this offensive-minded coach coming out of Stanford, and he's got them playing the defensive standard to the best in the league. So to answer your question, I think that the offense has become more and I think part of it's TV. I think TV ratings go up when you see more points. I think there's more fans in the stands. Football is going to get fans in the stands. But for network ratings, it's offense is what sells. It's what sells it, and that's not just football. That's basketball, not basketball so much, but baseball. You know, it's just the difference between offense and defense isn't as balanced as it used to be. There's still a Ravens here and there. There's still 49ers here. They were built by their defense, but there's more teams of the Drew Brees, a Tom Brady, a Peyton Manning, a Eli Manning, Aaron Rodgers that are throwing for 4,000 or 5,000 yards, which in the old days didn't happen. You know, it just didn't have, statistically didn't happen.
You just don't see low-scoring games anymore, do you?
No, not unless you've seen the Ravens playing the 49ers, you know, something like that. You know, it's, or if there's a lot of turnovers. I mean, it's, you know, I expect a high-scoring game on Sunday, but you never know. It's just, you know, that's what sells, and I think that's what they want. And I think I think the defensive players are grumbling a little bit about that, rightfully so. But you know, they're still getting paid, you know. So I mean, I don't know how much they can grumble, but the rules have been geared to the, you know, to the offense, like I've been saying.
Well, we're going into Super Bowl week, and the biggest game of the year, which turns out to many times to be the most least entertaining game of the year. But I think this year's going to be a dandy. I really believe that New England and New York's going to put on quite a show for the fans.
Yeah, the last 4 or 5 years have been good games. You're right, Larry, the first, you know, maybe 30 Super Bowls or probably, I don't know exactly, but maybe 6 or 7 games that were close. But the last four or five have been down to the wire, and that's what you're probably going to see this time as well. But if you're going to, it's not going to be a 10-6 game. It's going to be a 42-35 is what I'm, you know, not that's. That's what I'm looking at is, you know, both offenses, because even though the Giants' running game isn't very rated very high, it doesn't have to be. You know, neither one of these running backs for either team has ran, I think the leading rusher on both teams, neither one of them had 700 yards. And in today's day and age of a 16-game season, I can remember when it used to be a big thing to get 1,000 yards. When they get 1,000 yards now in a season, all a running back has to do is run for 67 yards a game. So you got these running backs at both these teams, and neither one of them got 700 yards. That just overemphasizes how much they've counted on their passing game. And both Eli Manning and Tom Brady are two of the quarterbacks that have gone over 4,000 yards. In fact, Brady went over 5,000. And that just kind of, you know, it's going to be a high-scoring game unless there's a lot of turnovers. That's the only thing I think that can keep the score down.
Yeah. I think between the two quarterbacks we're going to see this Sunday, Brady and Manning, I think as far as an entertainment value, Manning is probably number one, but overall quarterback, who would you consider to be the best?
Between those two?
Yes, sir.
I would say probably you'd have to give it to Brady up till now because I go by the number of championships won, I mean, and statistics, but I think Eli's on the rise. I think Manning's, you know, I'm not saying he's on the way down, but it's ironic to me that if Eli does win another Super Bowl, especially, of course, story's been pushed all year long everywhere, but, you know, when the two Manning brothers came into the league, you know, Peyton got all the stats, got all the publicity, and Eli kind of came and slid in, and is he any good? You know, he's just a little brother, and if he wins, of course, he's going to have two championships to Peyton's one, which if you would have guessed 5 years ago which of the two was going to win a second Super Bowl first, everybody would have picked Peyton. But you know, it's, you're right. I think right now Brady is at the top because of the number of Super Bowls he's already won to Eli's one. But you know, because if Brady wins another one, he's in the rarefied air of a Terry Bradshaw and of a Joe Montana. That's it. You know, but if Eli gets one, he jumped up to the number to a few quarterbacks that have only won two. Multiple Super Bowls. There's only 10 or so of those. So they both are in a position where by one more win, they're going to put themselves up in another category. And some people are saying that if Eli wins this game, he's a Hall of Famer. And yeah. I don't know if you can say that, you know, but I mean, they said that about Kurt Warner, you know, if he wins. But I don't know if you can count it on one game. You know, I don't think one game can make or break a Hall of Fame career. But they're saying, you know, if you win two championships, how can you not? But that's just the press talking, trying to hype the game, I guess.
Oh, absolutely. Well, the big news today here in Indianapolis is that Peyton Manning has been cleared to play football.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. I was kind of surprised actually that was such a big story. I think sometimes they, you know, when there's nothing to report, they, you know, I mean, it's obviously big to you guys, but I guess living out east or living down south, I didn't realize that was even a question. I mean, I just thought it was a matter of time.
Right.
So, yeah, good for you guys. But I don't know. I heard something on SportsCenter today that it was almost like saying, well, now that he's cleared, will the Colts still take Luck? And I'm thinking, why would that keep him from taking Andrew Luck? I mean, just because, you know, Peyton might have 2 or 3 good years, but they could have Luck come in and do what Rodgers did and sit behind Favre. And you know, if you put Luck in as a starter, if you count on him as a rookie quarterback, I mean, some guys have done it, Andy Dalton for Cincinnati this year, you know, and, you know, Flacco a few years back and Roethlisberger, you know, they started early in their career. But I don't think there's anything wrong with a guy coming in and playing behind a quarterback for a year or two. And if Manning does have problems with his neck, yeah, you can fall back on Luck. But I don't think you can count out Manning Peyton yet. I think he's got a few good years left, but I also don't think he can get passed up Andrew Luck if he's the franchise quarterback everybody says he is. So I was surprised that they were making it seem as if, well, Peyton's, healthy now, so are we going to still draft Luck? And I'm thinking, well, why wouldn't you? You know, so.
Well, that's,
unless
that's
you got.
The big, yeah, that's the big question with the 26 or 20, I forget the exact figure, but they had Jim Irsay on the radio last night, and he says within the next 5 years he'll invest over $800 million in his football team. So $27 million in Peyton Manning was nothing as far as he was concerned.
Well, I'm kind of thinking that, too. They keep putting that March 1st date or March whatever deadline, and they're saying that if they don't get past this, that they owe Peyton the $28 million. One thing they have never mentioned in the press, I've never heard anywhere, anything I've read or anywhere I've heard, you know, they can come to some kind of agreement. If that's the only thing that's going to keep them from signing Manning, you know, Manning's been there long enough. I'm sure he's got enough money. You know, he could always make a deal with Irsay. You know, he could restructure his contract, that signing bonus. I don't think he will. I mean, it'd be very rare. But Manning's a very rare player. He's not one of those guys that's just out there for the blood. I mean, if he wanted to stay with the Colts and he wanted Luck to stay with the Colts, I mean, he's got the option of saying, okay, here, Irsay, well, let's reschedule this. Let's put this. I'll just take the $14 million, cut my bonus in half to $14 million, whatever it is, and we'll throw the $14 million on the end and just add it to my tail end of my salary, which would stretch out the salary cap a little bit, but it would free up the salary cap a little bit this year. So I don't know, but nobody's ever mentioned that possibility. I don't know if that's even, if it's because it's not a possibility, but I don't think that the $28 million is a lot to give a player that's not going to play.
Right,
because that's a lot of you can sign four more players, and the Colts being 2-14, I mean, they need a lot of help.
Yep.
I mean, I don't think it's all quarterback, but you don't want to throw Andrew Luck into a 2-12 team either, or a 2-14 team either, and expect him to be the savior if everything else is falling apart around him as well.
Yep.
And that's something you got to they got to consider as well. So,
absolutely, our guest tonight, Mark Chesna. My Lord, Mark, we get so much information from you in such a short period of time. It's it's unbelievable. We're going to take a short break. We love him. From Shepherdstown, West Virginia, I call him North America's greatest football fan, and he's living up to it tonight. This is Larry Batson, and you are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Here's a hot topic about our wildlands and living with the natural role of fire.
Yard work is not just a matter of pride when you live in the wildland urban interface. It's also about survival. Here are some FireWise tips that can help protect your home from wildland fire. Prune your trees 6 to 10 feet above the ground. Remove dead leaves and branches and dispose of them before fire season. Water your lawn regularly and store firewood away from the house. Be prepared for a fire emergency by having a plan for your family and pets. Learn more at our website, and then sit back and enjoy. You worked for it.
This hot topic was made possible by the Teresa and H. John Hines III Foundation. Learn more about the natural role of fire, how to protect your community, and get the latest fire information. Visit the National Interagency Fire Center website at NIFC.gov. That's NIFC.gov.
This week's episode, Bobcat in the Cave.
Gosh, Johnny, playing in the cave sure is neat.
Oh, boy, a kitty cat.
Cassie, the kitty cat's yelling. What, Sassy? It's not a kitty? It's a bobcat? Speaking of cats, you like to stress the importance of adopting cats from animal shelters? Over 5 million cats go into animal shelters every year? And with millions of healthy cats to choose from, it's a shame more people don't adopt from shelters.
This bobcat's heavy. Help, Sassy!
Why bother? We'll just get into more trouble tomorrow?
What's that supposed to mean? Oh, nuts.
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
Well, hello, everyone. This is Larry Batson. This is Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. We're going to be back with Mark Chesna, North America's greatest sports fan, in just a few moments. We want to remind everyone that next week on our program, Gosh, she's a poet, a writer, a butterfly expert, also quite the Bigfoot follower. Robert Michael Pyle will be with us for a fascinating hour, so we hope everyone can have a chance to join us. And I'm giving you a big preview, everybody, because the week after, on February the 16th, from the legendary classic rock band Yes, Tony Kaye will be on the show. We're really looking forward to that as we talk a little bit about Yes and the music that he's produced for that phenomenal band. That'll be happening on February the 16th. We would also like to thank our individual underwriters that do support us. You can become a supporter of this broadcast. Go to LarryTheAnimalGuy.com and contact yours truly, and we'll tell you how easy it is to be an individual underwriter per year. And your name will be broadcast on each edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Our guest tonight is Mark Chesna from Shepherdstown, West Virginia. He's with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And we're talking football tonight, everybody, as Indianapolis gets ready for this big Super Bowl. And I will have to tell you, Mark, I think Indianapolis has done a superior job than most of the big cities in the last few years that have hosted the Super Bowl, because we've had superior weather, phenomenal crowds, and everybody's just loving it.
Well, that's good that the weather's holding up, because I remember the Detroit Super Bowl. I mean, the flak that a lot of people took because of the storm they had at that time of year, and they were starting to question the idea of having northern cities hosting. And so, I mean, it's good that you had the good weather to not be an issue.
Oh, absolutely. And, of course, we're looking 2 years from now, I believe, when New York City will host the Super Bowl at an outdoor stadium. That should be quite the venue. Hopefully no ice or snow for that day, because, man, the fans that come to the Super Bowl, that would be something else.
Yeah, and I went to a game up there once on a Monday night, and that was in an October game, and I just froze. And it was a Monday night game in October. But the Super Bowl always starts a little bit later because of primetime ratings. It's all about the TV. So it's going to start at 6, 7. It's not going to start at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So you're right. If they have snow, if they have rain, even if they don't, just the cold itself might, you know, then again, that might keep some of the corporate people away, the ones that aren't. A lot of people, the Super Bowl crowd is a little different than the average crowd. You go to a football game at Lambeau or, you know, RFK or Redskins. I don't like Redskins anymore because their owner, they kind of really screws the fans, but my point is to go to Pittsburgh. You know, it's real, it's fans, and it's, you know, but for Super Bowl, it's one of those things that, yeah, there's going to be some Giants fans, there's going to be some fans there for the Patriots, but a lot of it's corporate fans that are there not caring who's actually winning or who's playing, but just because they're at the Super Bowl. So I don't know if those kind of people are going to want to deal with putting up with a cold winter outside game versus at least they're in Indianapolis, no matter what happens, the game is inside.
Right. You're a Packers fan. What's the coldest conditions you've ever experienced for a Packer game?
Well, I've been below zero. I mean, I've been in snowstorms. Back in the 80s, I had season tickets the season tickets, and I had some games where I lived 50 miles away. I lived in Oshkosh, which is 50 miles south of Green Bay, and cold. As long as you're ready for it. I mean, you being a Packer fan, you just put the snowmobile seat, the long underwear on. You know how to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
But and the same thing for the people that live in New York. But I'm saying the corporate people that are flying in aren't going to be used to that. If Dallas is in, for instance, the Dallas fans are gonna. I don't think they'll be prepared. But we've had some snowstorms. There's been a couple games that's taken me 3-4 hours to get back from Oshkosh, the 50-mile drive from Green Bay, just because, not so much because of snow, but because of the cold and the ice that's frozen up the highway and accidents left and right. And I went to a playoff game a few years back when they played Seattle. I don't know if you remember. It was a blizzard during that game.
Yeah.
And it was Packers were down 14-0 real quick and then came back and won that game. So that was – but that, again, when you're dressed for it, if you're prepared for it, and Packer fans in Lambeau or – in Buffalo or in Pittsburgh, they know how to dress for it. But, again, it's the fans that are coming because it's a Super Bowl in New York outside at night. And if it's that alone enough is cold, much less if they have any bad weather. So it's going to be interesting. What it might do is free up tickets for guys like me who want to get tickets and not pay the big bucks for it, because, you know, we'll dress warm and put up with the weather. But you never know.
I saw tickets. It's unbelievable with the Super Bowl. $900, $1,000, $2,000 a ticket.
Well, 900 is face value, Larry. Even if you just bought a ticket, regular price ticket, that's $900.
Yeah. Wow.
So, I mean, that's not even broker tickets. Yeah, it's yeah, that's the highest, the biggest expensive ticket. And in fact, I'll probably never get to another Super Bowl. The only one I ever got to, I took a job 1 year in Atlanta, where I live on weekends, and the Falcons were hosting the Super Bowl 1 year. It was the year Buffalo played Dallas, and I got a job as a beer vendor for the season. So then when the Super Bowl came along, I had a free ticket in. And I stopped selling beer 2 minutes in the game and just watched the game. You know, watch. I mean, I stopped. I could have made a lot more money because it was incredible. I'd usually during a season on a regular season game, I'd make maybe $70-$80 plus tips, and but walk out of there with a free game. And the first game I went to that season, in the preseason game, you're supposed to turn your beer in at the end of the third quarter. Well, I did, and the line was so long, I missed half the fourth quarter. So from then on, I turned my beer in at halftime. Well, what happened during the Super Bowl was, there were so many people outside the stadium waiting to get in that they let us take 3 or 4 cases out and just set them down. And I made, you know, $600-$700 before the game even started.
Oh,
when I got
Lord.
To my stand, yeah, and I when I got to my stand where they were selling the beer, you're either selling Miller or Coors or Bud, whatever, they had already ran out of my kind of beer that I was selling. And instead of just giving me a different kind of beer, they just and to come back at halftime and get some more. And I'm thinking to myself, halftime. That's when I stopped selling it. So I took out a rack of Coca-Cola, you know, and I thought, and that was hard to finagle. It was kind of like, you know, and I thought to myself, what am I doing? I'm at the Super Bowl. Who cares if I make another dime? So I took out a shoulder of peanuts, you know, over my shoulder, and I made like $15 the rest of the game. Now, I'm sure the guys that worked real hard, the vendors, must have cleaned up. But my point was I got to see the Super Bowl. My wife later on in life told me, oh, it's too bad that the first time you got to go to a Super Bowl, which is probably the only time, you had to work. I'm going, what do you mean too bad? I was in the front row the whole game. If I would have bought a ticket for $500-$600, I'd been way upstairs. And I literally was in the front row on the Dallas sideline the first half or Buffalo the second half. And I just walked up and down, and if I didn't sell any more money or any more peanuts, I didn't sell any more peanuts. And a funny story, Larry, too, is that this is – I always keep the ticket stubs from the games I go to. Well, obviously, if I'm working as a vendor, I'm not going to have a ticket stub. So as I was walking up down the aisles, I was just looking to see if I could find a ticket stub laying on the ground. And it was this drunk guy who had dropped his ticket stub, and it was soaked with beer already. So I, quote, accidentally dropped all my change, which made me look like an idiot. Mm-hmm. But as I picked up all my change, I also picked up that wet ticket stub and took it home and dried it out. And so I got a ticket stub from that game. And otherwise, I never would have had a ticket stub from that game. So.
Well. How many ticket stubs have you ever counted? All the ticket stubs Mark Chestnut has.
Well, I know, but I know the games. I'm coming up on my 2,500th game. I'm about 12, 13, 14 shy of 2,500. But that's not the number of ticket stubs because I got people, friends of mine that always would send me. You know, they go to the Indy 500 and send me a ticket stub, but they go to, they'd send me ticket stubs from games they went to as well. So I've always thrown their ticket stubs in my, I got a sports collection, and most of it, of course, the games I've been to, but it's not specifically just games I've been to. So I've got, I guess to put it this way, I think I've got 8 or 9 notebooks full of ticket stubs.
Wow.
And, the peel-up pages, and then, but I guess the more accurate count is games I'm coming up, like I say, at number 2,500 in the next 12 or 13 games, so.
What's
a little obsessive. I keep track of the number. I worked at a Hardee's when I was in college, and I lopped off part of my thumb. So while I was off for a week, I took all my stats. My father, when he took me to games, taught me how to keep score. And so I always kept score in the program. So, and then I'd read something in a Sporting News or Sports Illustrated. I'd wonder, hey, did I see that guy play? So I'd go through all the old programs. So what I finally decided to do was just combine all those numbers and stats and players I've seen play, et cetera, in one or two notebooks. And so I did that way back then, and I've just kept it up through the years. So now I've just got a huge notebook with all the, you know, games, city, date, score, and the basketball's broken down a little more, and baseball's broken down, how many times I've seen each player play. Again, a little obsessed, so I realize that, but I can find those numbers in an instant. If I am reading a story on, you know, Cal Ripken, I can turn the Orioles page and say, yep, saw him play 89 times.
Oh, man.
But, I mean, that's a big name. You know, it's more of an obscure name that usually causes me to go look something up, like a Lyman Bostock, for instance. When he got shot and, you know, killed, I looked and saw, yep, once to the Angels, twice to the Twins. I could go to those pages and just look. I don't know why I thought his name, but that was just an example that came to mind. So,
what's the number one sporting event you've ever been to? Do you have one?
I've got a favorite one. I don't know if it'd be the number one. I've been to some really cool ones. I went to Iditarod 1 year. I was at the finish line of Iditarod in Alaska. I went to the European League Final Four in Prague. I'm not a golf fan, but I've been to all four Masters, all four of the majors, including the British Open at St. Andrews, which not being a golf fan, it's still being at St. Andrews is pretty awesome. But the number one sporting event in my mind, when people ask me, there's two that stand out. In 1976, when I was in college, I went to a summer course called Comparative Physical Education, and it was the 76 Olympics. We talked for 2 weeks about how this was before steroids, but it was still pretty much based on how East Germans women built. They didn't use the word steroids, but how they built up, why they were so much stockier, different things like that. And for the third week of the class, we went to the Olympics. Well, if you remember in 72 Olympics, the basketball, that's when the basketball team got robbed in Russia, and you know they got three chances to win the last second shot, and they did it, and to the point where the U.S. team didn't even accept the silver medal. Well, I was hoping for kind of a rematch because of that controversy. And, of course, if there would have been a rematch, it might have been impossible to get a ticket. But two or three days before that, I went to a basketball game, Yugoslavia versus Russia, where Yugoslavia jumped out to this huge lead. Russia came back, took the lead, which, of course, you'd figure Russia would win, and they did not win. And the crowd was just chanting, Yugoslavia, which is cool. But what was cool was the gold medal game when I saw the U.S. play Yugoslavia, even though it was U.S. versus Yugoslavia. That was one of the first highlights of my life, to see a gold medal basketball game. And the weird thing is, I've heard the national anthem, you know, 2,000 times or whatever, but for some reason here in a different country, be it just Canada, it just had a different kind of meaning. In fact, when I had to go back and write a paper on for my final with the class, I kind of wrote it around that theme about, you know, seeing getting a different perspective on hearing the national anthem. So that's one. And the other one that really stands out for me is when I was in college, I used to be sports director of our radio station, so I would get press passes, and I went up to Minnesota one time to try to interview Rod Carew, and he was really a jerk. I mean, not just because he said no, a lot of people said no, but just his swearing at me and all that kind of stuff, pointing his bat at me and saying, get the F away. You know, so I never really liked Rod Carew. So back in 1982, the Brewers were in the playoffs, and they were out to the Angels. They were down 0-2. And at that time, no team had ever come back from an 0-2 deficit to win three straight. And I worked a crappy job where I could only get 1 weekend a month off. So I took that weekend off, hoping the Brewers would win at least one game or two. Well, they didn't. They won all three. And the last batter of that game, in game five, the ALCS, that's when it was a game, five-game series, was Rod Carew. And, you know, and he hit the ball to Rob Neal, my all-time favorite. You know, and so that moment of exhilaration of not only Carew grounding out, but sending the Brewers to the World Series, it actually meant I was going to go to the World Series, too. And back then, I was young enough, that was my first World Series. It was my team. And a funny sidebar to that story is I went to work the next day, and I said, I need next weekend off because I had World Series tickets, and the boss said, you can't. You said, this weekend off. And I just said, I quit. And he said, you want to play over a baseball game? I said, damn right. I said, I'm going to look back at this moment 20 years from now, and I'm going to say, oh, am I glad I worked that weekend? Am I glad I went to the World Series? But luckily I had, you know, people that covered for me, didn't have to quit my job and all that, but I really didn't, you know. So that was, at first, was one of the first highlights of my life, was that 82, even more so than the World Series, was the ALCS, when they had to come back from the Angels against the Angels and win game 3, 4, and 5. And so that kind of was the first really cool moment. And then there's been plenty since that of just like I say, with 2,487, I guess it's, I could give you a top 10, but that would, you know, take some thinking. And
did you have a favorite event you went to this summer?
My favorite event this year is I saw Jeter's 3,000th hit. I always wanted to see a 300th win, which I saw when Clemens did it once. I went to his second, actually his first and fifth attempt. I always wanted to see a 500th home run, and I wanted to see a 3,000th hit. And through the years, I've come close many times. Back in 1974, I saw Kaline hit, Al Kaline hit 2998, 2999. And that was the first of many times. I won't bore you with all of them, but all the times where I just missed it. Well, I got to see Jeter's 3,000th. And I'm not a Yankee fan, but, you know, I respect Jeter. But to see that monument, that moment was just the highlight of my year. That and the Rose Bowl last. I went to the Rose Bowl last year, even though the Badgers lost. I go to a couple bowl games every year, and last year seeing the Badger game, the Rose Bowl, and the Jeter's 3,000th hit were the highlights of my year. I mean, if you can, I'll tell you a funny story about Griffey's 500th home run.
Yeah.
That's how obsessed I guess I am. There's a minor league baseball stadium in Birmingham, Alabama, called Rickwood Field, and that's the oldest stadium in America. They don't play anymore there. They play in the stadium that when Jordan was playing there. They play in, and they saw Jordan play there 1 year. But anyway, my wife likes minor league baseball to some extent. She'll put up with it. So she got us tickets for that game in Rickwood Field. Keep in mind, this is on a Thursday afternoon. They only play once a year there. So this is Saturday night. Ken Griffey Jr. sitting on 498 home runs. And I tell my wife, you know, if he hits a home run tonight, I'm going to fly to Cleveland tomorrow. Well, he did not hit a home run tonight on Saturday. So that Sunday, my wife and I drove down to Montgomery, Alabama, where they had a new minor league team called the Montgomery Biscuits. Went to the game there, and while we're at the game there, Griffey hits number 499. So on Monday morning when I flew back, instead of coming to work, I drove up to Philadelphia, where they had a makeup game, Reds and Phillies. Well, because it was a rainy day or whatever, they didn't play Griffey at all. So I sat there through the whole game. There was rain delays. I didn't leave there until 2 in the morning. But a sidebar to that story is Jim told me at number 400. Anyway, so I get back to work. I leave Philly at 2. I get back at 5. I go to work at 6. I work a half a day, and then I flew to Cincinnati. Well, Griffey's still in the home run. This is Tuesday night. So I fly back to work on Wednesday, and Wednesday night I fly to Atlanta because on Thursday we got the tickets for Birmingham. Well, I'm just hoping he doesn't hit the home run, and he does not hit it. So on Friday I fly to St. Louis. So he still does not hit the home run. I spend the night in the airport, fly back on the early flight to Atlanta Saturday morning, really bummed out, thought I blew my chance. And so I spend the day with my wife on Saturday and Saturday night, and on Sunday morning I got up. I said, you know what, I got to go back to St. Louis. So I'm back to St. Louis, and I saw his 500th home run. And I guess what was so erratic about the story is because if I think about it, I was in Atlanta on Saturday, in Montgomery on Sunday, in Philadelphia on Monday, in Cincinnati on Tuesday, back to work on Wednesday, then in Birmingham on Thursday, St. Louis on Friday, back to Atlanta on Saturday, back to St. Louis on Sunday, and back to work on Monday. But I was able to see the 500th home run. And that reminds me of the Jeter's 3,000 hit, because those are the three milestones I've always wanted to see, was a 3,000 hit, a 500th home run, and a 300th win, as far as baseball is concerned. And so that was the highlight of my summer.
Wow. That's pretty impressive.
In roundabout fashion. Words.
That's impressive. All right, let's put it all together. I want your analysis of this year's Super Bowl, the New England Patriots and the New York Giants. What do you think?
Well, the rematch factor is just too high. I think the Giants are the better team all around, but I still think that I really think that, and this is a stupid reason to pick the Patriots. I think if the Patriots would have beat the Giants during the season, I'd be picking the Giants. But it's just those ones I mentioned before, and I didn't even mention them all. LSU, Alabama is another one. I just got a feeling that just because they lost in the season, they're going to win. And also, people are throwing that rematch of the time they ruined their perfect season, and that might be a factor. It's got to be a factor. I'm sure Belichick and Brady and those guys wanted that perfect season. And if they could be playing anybody right now, they'd be going to play the Giants, the team that ruined their perfect season. So I think emotionally, I think that the Patriots have got the advantage. They've also played in that stadium a number of times, being an AFC team. I don't think that really matters that much. But I think it would be more of an advantage if the Giants are playing outside, that's not true. The Patriots play outside as well. But if I had to bet, and I would pick the Patriots, and they're favored, and yet for some reason I still don't know why they're favored, and yet that's the team I would still expect to win. But I think if I want to win, I'd like to see Eli win a second Super Bowl.
Well, that's pretty much the analysis that the fans here in Indianapolis have, because they absolutely hate the New England Patriots. I mean, it's almost like I don't know who's Green Bay's greatest nemesis.
Vikings.
Chicago Bears.
Well, it used to be, but it's more so the Vikings now.
Yeah. Well, it's very similar, that the hatred toward the New England Patriots. Though Belichick did make the analysis that he's treated better in Indiana now since he went on fourth down to fourth and two, and they didn't make it. Then the Colts turned around and won the game, that he's much better liked now in the crossroads of America, as they used to call it. So,
Well, it's amazing what a team will do for you. When you think of Bill Belichick, I mean, his old days, he was coaching Cleveland, and I don't even know if he had a 500 record. He reminds me of like a Joe Torre from when he was coaching the Braves and the Cardinals. All of a sudden, hooks onto the Yankees, and now Joe Torre's the greatest manager ever. And the words of the press, and Belichick is now getting that same, and I'm not taking anything away from Belichick, but it sometimes depends on who you got underneath you. You got a Tom Brady, and it's going to make any coach look good. Not to take away from Belichick, because he's definitely done the job, but a lot of people, get on Belichick's case about that Spygate thing from years ago, and I think that's overblown. I mean, I think any team will do what they can to get an advantage. But, so there's a lot of people around the league that don't like Belichick or don't like Brady, but I think it's people that are just jealous of success a lot. Not so much Indianapolis, because you guys, your rivalries, that's a different thing. But a lot of people that don't like Brady, I think it's just, or don't like a Yankees team. Well, that's a little different, because Yankees are a little arrogant, not as bad as Philadelphia people. But, I think there's a lot of people that want to root against certain teams, like Dallas. You either are a Dallas fan or you hate Dallas. And I think the Patriots are kind of in that same book, where if you're not a Patriots fan in New England, you're rooting against them. So it's that's I can see where the Giants are going to be getting more fan support in that regards. And it's funny, because it wasn't just a few years ago that Tom Coughlin was on the edge of losing his job. And look what he's done.
Oh.
So.
Well, even this year, that was part of the conversation on the sports talk shows. Coughlin was out after they had their – they stumbled in the middle of the season, lost to the Redskins twice, I believe. And
yeah, they did.
And people were wondering, who do you think is the greatest coach of all time?
Biasedly, I'm going to say Lombardi because, you know, be Green Bay, I'm going to have to say with that. But I guess I'll have to say Lombardi, you know, because he – people look at, I get in arguments with Steeler fans here who say, oh, the Steelers got the most Super Bowls, and I have to go come back and say, well, the Packers got the most championships because they've got twice as many championships. If the Steelers doubled their championships, it's to be one shy. Point being is that some people don't count it. Well, it's not the Super Bowl era. Well, that's like saying the Yankees World Series don't count before 1960, you know. But so I'm going to go, I'd have to say Lombardi because they're going back in the 60s and the 70s. But again, I think that's some bias there. That's like if you ask me where's the best place to watch a football game, I'm going to tell you Lambeau. But a lot of the stadiums have become corporate where they aren't anything fun like the old RFKs and the old, or they
right.
become domes. I don't know about your, in fact, your stadium is one of the three I haven't been to yet, and the Packers come there next year. So, hey, by the way, Larry, if you can hook me up with tickets next year, I'll be looking. I'll be coming. But I still got to see Lombardi out of bias, but it's hard because you can say Chuck Noll, you can say Tom Landry. But Chuck Noll, just to give you an example, I mean, you know, Hall of Fame. He had Hall of Fame and quarterback in Bradshaw and Franco Harris and Lynn Swann and then but I guess Lombardi did too with Bart Starr and you know, so it's either the players that meet the coach or the coach that makes the players. That's always what kind of comes around for me is that you know it's a there is a hand in hand it you know it's just
right.
Yeah, so.
It's always weird when the players don't perform, the coach gets fired, and you always say to yourself, well, the coach is not catching passes. The coach is not tackling. He's just trying to motivate these millionaires to play their heart out.
Well, like in any sport, I mean, you look at just here in Washington, D.C. area, Flip Saunders, who's been a good coach everywhere he's been, and he came to the Wizards, who, you know, they're terrible, and they don't run the organization's not run very well, and so they had to dump Flip, and he's won in Detroit, and he's a good coach, and he'll catch on somewhere else, and he'll win. That's just the way it is. But the Wizards have, you know, they're not gonna they got a selfish ball players. They got rid of they had the big three with the Arenas, and all, they got rid of all the players, and you know, how can you win? And it's you're right. They gotta. So what do? You know, they fired the coach. They brought in one of your guys, Randy Whitman from Indiana, is now
right. Running
the show in Washington, and you know, hope he does well. But it's just a matter of time. It's you can't always blame the coach, but you can't. The old standard line is, well, you can't fire 13 players, or in a case of football, you can't fire 42 players, or so you got to get rid of the coach. But
right. Let's
hope a new guy comes in and changes the system around. Shanahan. I mean, Shanahan was a winner in Detroit, in Denver, a winner in Denver, a winner in Denver. He's done nothing in Washington. You know, so is he a good coach or not? Or is it a matter of he had Elway, you know, Elway versus Rex Grossman? You know, so that's kind of misleading sometimes. And that's why in football, to give the only players in football that get the win attached to their name is the quarterback and the coach. Unlike in baseball, it's a pitcher. Oh, he's out there throwing every pitch. But in football, in football, a quarterback can go 2 for 12 and win defense can win the game, and it goes up as a notch as a win in the quarterback's. Column as well as a coach, but it doesn't. You're not saying, well, the running backs are 1-0 or 2-0. So it's kind of they take the heat, but they also get the credit, I think. So it kind of balances itself out.
I have to tell our listeners that last year when we had you on the program, when the Packers were playing the Steelers, that you predicted and you were correct that the Packers were going to win. You said you were biased, but man, you hit the nail right on the head.
Well, there again. Was it last year? The year before, the Packers were in Pittsburgh and they lost in the last play of the game. But Roethlisberger threw for over 500 yards.
Mm-hmm.
So again, that was another rematch example. But I'm not sure it was the same season. But, yeah, and that was again a biased call. So I mean, it's I'm always going to say the Packers. But Packers, Badgers, Brewers, Bucks. My Wisconsin roots grow deeply, even though I live in Atlanta and work in West Virginia. I still root for Wisconsin teams.
Well, Mark. Gosh, what a pleasure to have you on the show. I feel like such a moron when it comes to sports after you have addressed our worldwide audience. I mean, this is what a show, Dr.
Well,
Day.
I'm the moron, Larry, because all I know is sports, and you got more of a well-rounded knowledge of everything else, and I'm pretty narrow-minded where I read Sports Illustrated, ESPN, and Sporting News, and I give up on everything else. So I'm the moron, but at least I'm enjoying it and having a good time with it. So.
Oh, absolutely.
Mark, do you remember Too Tall Jones?
Yes, Too Tall Jones Cowboys. Let me
yeah,
go to the box.
He's in town. I happened to run into him at the Radisson Hotel earlier today. Do you know how he got his name?
Well, I assumed it was because of his height. Is he was 6'7 or something? But no, I don't know the exact story, no.
Well, he was too tall to be drafted in the Army. And that
was
his
Army
name. Yeah.
Oh, okay. No, I didn't know that.
He does now.
I'm sure there's a lot of celebrities in town this week, sport-wise,
oh, yeah,
musicians and everything else. That's the congregational place to be is Super Bowl week, is the site of the game.
Oh, it's phenomenal. I don't think Indianapolis was prepared or had any idea, though they are prepared. I mean, the events and everything has been spectacular. The weather's been spectacular. Nothing but compliments after last year's horror show at Dallas. And
well, they've handled Final Fours, and they've handled, you know, Big Ten championships before, so
yeah,
they're used to big. They've had some practice having big game events there. It's not like a first time thing. So, like Detroit's was kind of when they ran theirs.
Yeah, well, it's been phenomenal. Mark, the show was phenomenal. Gosh, now write it on your calendar next year. This time, we definitely have to have you back. And if the Patriots win, man, he'll be 2 for 2. So this is phenomenal. And gosh, give everyone our best in Shepherdstown. What a great show, Dr.
Okay,
Day.
We'll do that.
I agree.
And when I'm picking the Patriots, I want to say I'm rooting for the Giants.
Oh,
last
well
year I was picking and rooting for the Packers just to get that clear. I really hope the Giants win, but if I have to be open about it, I think it's the Patriots game to take. So
we want to remind everyone that next week on the show, Robert Michael Pyle, poet, writer from his home in Oregon. Tonight's broadcast is brought to you by the first annual Chautauqua Lake Bigfoot Expo, happening May 6th at Chautauqua Suites in Mayville, New York. Melissa Hovey, Steve Coles, Billy Willard, and myself, and all the staff from Larry Batson's Wild World will be there. Isn't that right, Dr. Day?
That's right. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's going to be spectacular. Folks, have a great week. Go Giants, because we hate the Patriots. You've been listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. Good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Larry Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.